So when I was a kid, welcome back. When I was a kid, when this song came out, 1972, 1973, I'll never forget that. And this song, I thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever heard. I'm serious. And every time I hear it, I just think about that summer of 1973. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, standing in for George Norrie tonight. Greatest night of the week on Coast to Coast. It's called Open Lines. Such a tradition around here. And last night I did open lines on my other show that I do right before Coast to Coast. So it's just open lines all night last night, open lines all night tonight. It's like I haven't stopped. And check this out. Stonehenge. We all know Stonehenge. We think we know Stonehenge. Well, we don't. We don't know much. And there is a new article out today, and you can check this out at Coast to Coast AM right there in the news. This new Stonehenge discovery. Stones in the monument, including the famous heel stone, the big one, were in place millions of years before humans even showed up. Now, so we're talking about the original construction of Stonehenge being around 3000 BC to 5000 BC. They don't really know. But that the big stones, including the heel stones, came from a quarry 60 miles away. Turns out that is not the case. Well, maybe. And you've got to check out the story. Now, this is what is so amazing about the heel stone. The heel stone lines up with the summer solstice. So it's been lined up with the summer solstice for millions of years. Who did that? That's what I want to know. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, standing in for George Norrie. Friday night, open lines. Your calls are next. Stay with us. All right, welcome back. Friday night, open lines, standing in for George Norrie. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. I want to go straight back to the phones. I've got a bunch of questions here lined up in Twitter as well. So you can follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. Any questions or comments, just post it right there, and I'll get right to it. But this is how I'd like to get things started. Let's go top to bottom. Wild card, Ian in New York. Ian, you're up next on Coast. Welcome.
Hello. Hi. I just want to say I had an experience with a type of alien. Just wanted to describe the experience to you. And I also want to follow up if you ever heard about amphibian aliens. Well, I was on what seemed like to be the moon, and I looked up, and it was a small, circular UFO that was, like, silver, and it was really small, and it had, like, a bubble type of center, and there is, like, a little man in there that was about 3-4 feet tall. He was sitting down. He had a silver helmet with clear, you know, visor, whatever, you know what I mean, clear front of the mask,
right,
silver suit,
right,
and his skin was, like, grayish, but it was definitely humanoid.
Now, Ian, you said you were on the moon?
Yes. It was an out-of-body experience.
Well, I hope it was. Yeah, well, let's, yeah. Okay. but you're on the moon. And so you were close enough. How far away would you say that the craft was? Because you're able to see the size, the helmet, the visor, the skin color.
It had to be around 10 to 15 feet in the air. Me and the alien, we locked eyes. It was looking at me, so it could see, like, my ghostly body.
Right.
We locked eyes, and I was looking at it for, I would say, about 15, 20 seconds. And then that kind of, like, something happened where I just, like, vibrated back to my body, and I just, like, woke up, like, startled, and I was like, holy cow.
Right.
It was, yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. And so when you have that type of out-of-body experience, certainly something like that, it's just as real as anything else, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's just as real as, yeah, just like waking life, you know. I definitely, yep.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that with us. And did you talk to your family about it?
I've told a lot of my friends. I don't think I've told my mom or dad about it, but I've told a lot of my friends about the experience. I used to run a site on out-of-body experiences, so that's, like, one of my stories that I have. And the reason why I ask about amphibian aliens is because people always sort of said that I was like, you know, lizard king, lizard eyes.
But right.
I didn't think I'm like reptilian. I think I'm more like Kermit the Frog, like amphibian.
Right, right. Okay. Which is fine. Which is fine. Yeah. Well, see, if you look, you have to always, I always look at us and this planet and things around us. If, Ian, if you and I and your dog and my dog all got on a ship and went to, we went to Alpha Centauri, right? And we're there and we go and we hang out and we step off the ship. You and I are going to look like two different species. They're not going to think we're the same, right? And then we have our two dogs with us. I've got my Schnauzer. You've got your German Shepherd. And they're going to think those are, in fact, they may even think that they're the smart ones and you and I are the pets. Do you understand what I'm saying? So the whole Kermit the Frog thing, when it comes to reptiles, I'm totally with you on that. So thank you for the phone call and enjoy the rest of your Friday going into Saturday here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ian. That's a great phone call. And I really need to stress that. If you think about it, Tommy, look at you. Look at me. Look at Dan. The three of us walk into an alien bar. They're not going to think we're from the same planet. They're just not. We don't look the same. You know, and what if we had, you know, somebody from, you know, Japan and somebody from Africa and throw a Canadian in, right? Think about that for a second. This is Coast to Coast AM. Let's go to, I'm going to go to, and, you know, we love our friends in the Great White North. Somebody just posted up in Twitter. I saw that. Jimmy, you left Canada out tonight. Well, I just dropped it in. And on top of that, wait till you hear the closing track that we're running tonight on our bumper music. Let's go to Spike, Round Top, Texas. You're up next on Coast.
Good morning, Jimmy.
Good morning, Spike. How are you?
I've been holding for just a little bit, and I actually had a question for James, but I do have a couple of comments if you allow me to make them and also ask a question of you.
Mark, set, go.
All right. When I was about 17, I was roughhousing with a group of other high school guys on a sandbank on the Brazos River.
Right.
And one of the guys hit me pretty hard and knocked me down. And when I got up, I felt something fall, sort of, I can't explain, inside my head. And I tilted my head and shook it a little bit. And a round, metallic-looking object, sort of silver-gray, rolled out of my ear. And I was standing there looking at it, and another guy hit me again real hard, and it flew out of my hand into the sand somewhere. And I was wondering if perhaps James had some insight as to what that thing might have been.
Well, you should write James. You can chase him down on Facebook and certainly his website and Twitter, too, as well, and ask him directly. He'll answer.
All right. Well, also, the other thing is I was in my Mazda pickup truck, just a little single cab pickup truck, about 10 years ago, and I was driving on some of the FM roads here, and I approached a little town of Shelby, Texas, and there was a road that came from the left, and I had the right of way approaching the little town, and as I came up, I'm in the truck by myself, and a voice says, "Watch out for that white pickup truck." There was a white dually pickup truck parked at the stop sign. And as I'm approaching, I'm about 2 seconds from there. And, of course, when a voice says that, you're probably going to listen. So I slowed way down. And when I got there, that truck pulled out right in front of me. And this voice came out of nowhere. It said, a male voice very calmly said, "Watch out for that white pickup truck."
Wow. Never ignore it.
No, never ignore it.
No, I'm being serious. Never ignore it. Well, you said you had a question for myself. I don't know why you would ask me a question, but what did you have?
I was going to ask you if you would know anything about if that was an implant or
what
that could have been.
Well, you know, let me tell you what, I'm going to make this really quick. A few months ago, I'm coming up to an intersection in Burbank, and I see on the corner a woman with a baby carriage, okay? Uh-huh. And it caught my eye. Normally, and it was a green light, right? And normally, I wouldn't notice. I would just go through the green light. Something, as I look at them, they didn't cross the street or anything in front of me, but I hit my brakes. And I don't know why I did it. I hit my brake, and at that moment, to my left, a white pickup truck, a dually, a big one, new one, ran the red light. Had I not, and I don't know what it was, right? But something caught my eye, and I hit my brakes. And I got to tell you something. My heart was pounding because I still had to go through the intersection, right? I couldn't stop. But it was that little millisecond of a delay that caused me to hit my brakes that allowed that dually to pass in front of me. I mean, I looked right at this truck. It missed me by a couple of feet. And you know how your adrenaline is, right? And it was one of those things. And it's something that woman and her baby was some kind of angel. I don't know how to explain it, but it made me hit my brakes. And like I said, normally this is just two people on a sidewalk that you would just drive by and never take notice of. So, I don't know. I'm not implant or divine intervention. I'm not sure what it was, but it happened.
Well, the white dually pickup truck was a common element there again.
That's why I brought it up.
Wow.
Yeah, weird, huh? And check this out, Spike. And I'm not joking about this. I told this story on my other show 3 months ago, exactly how I explained it to you now, white dually and all. Okay, so it's documented. Wasn't something that was just made up. I would never make anything up. But what I'm saying is, if you go back, listen to the original show, you will see the commonality between the two. It's just fascinating.
That is fascinating. Such tinted windows, I could not see anyone in it.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and listen to the original, my original description too as well. Spike, enjoy the rest of your morning, my friend. Thank you for the phone call.
Thank you, Jimmy. Enjoy it.
Great phone call, Spike. I'm telling you, white dually really happened. All right, let's go to, how much time do we have? All right, I'm going to go to Gabriella in Hawaii. Gabriella, you're up next on Coast.
Yo, Jimmy.
Yes, Gabriella.
I had an experience on Mount Adams back in 1989 that led to a drastic change in my life.
What happened?
Well, I was a field geologist, and we had forgotten something at the base camp on Mount Adams. So I said, oh, well, I'll go down and get it. You know me, I know the landmarks, I know exactly where it's at. And of course, you know, no buddy system, because I didn't want anybody seeing me smoke, okay? And I got lost. And of course, it was so dry that time that I didn't dare light a fire to boil water to purify it. So I drank it straight, and I crawled in my little tent, and I was so sick, and it sounded like a bear outside. And the next morning, though, I got up, and after I had my few cigarettes in the morning, Mother Mary appeared to me. And she said that, look at that deer over there. And I said, yes. She said, wouldn't it be nice to share that with somebody? And it was explained to me that I was supposed to propose to this Orthodox priest who was allowed to get married.
Say what?
Yeah, I was supposed to propose to this Orthodox priest that I knew to marry me. And eventually I did write a 7-page letter proposing marriage. And I said, okay, God, if you really want me to send this, send me a purple envelope to send it in. And so I belong to another organization that has meetings across the world. And a guy there had just cleaned out his briefcase, and it was in Quincy, California. And Quincy was the nickname of my deceased son. And this guy said, anybody need some envelopes? And he showed me a purple one, or showed a purple one, and went, okay, God, I'll do it. And eventually we did get married. And that changed my life, but it was an experience on Mount Adams that happened.
Mount Adams is responsible for a lot of strangeness.
And I have a, I've always wondered, Jimmy.
Yeah.
I think I may be either an escapee or a reject from hybrid breeding. Because I was found abandoned as a toddler amongst the trash cans naked behind an orphanage. And they couldn't trace my family. But through the years, I discovered that I only have one kidney, four ovaries and four tubes, an extra system to my heart, you know, where you have your arteries and whatever, and several other strange things about my body that it's not normal.
Well, you live in Hawaii. Can you go swim with the dolphins underwater for hours at a time and anything crazy like that?
I don't think I could do that. But, you know, I have this psychic ability that is also physical. I call it my seismic stigmata, where I get, like, it's a steel band around my chest just being tightened.
Right.
Just before a major earthquake happens.
Now, what about, oh, really? Okay, now that's pretty interesting. Do you have the ability to, I've got to head to a break here, Gabriella, so I want to get this question in really quick, answer as quick as you can. What about telepathy? Or communication, or channeling. Do you have any of those gifts?
I can communicate psychically with cats.
Oh, I can
probably
do
that. Even wild.
I can do that. I talk to my cat
even
all the time.
Wild. I mean, I can. I've been in Africa and all other places, and I've been able to communicate with wild felines.
What about your bird in the background?
That is not a bird. That is an invasive species called kokie frogs.
That's not a bird?
Something like a machine gun to kill them all because they disturb me, and they're destroying our habitat.
Gabriella, you're telling me that what is going on in the background is not a bird, it's a frog?
Yes, it's a kokie frog, and Lord, you should hear them when you go into Hilo, because it...
There are so many that it
hurts the ears.
Gabriella, enjoy the rest of your day, and thank you for this wonderful phone call.
Blessed, Jimmy, and please, people pray for me because they're threatening to shut off my electricity.
Oh, we're praying for you right now. Thank you so much, Gabriella. Enjoy the rest of your day. Standing in for George Norrie, I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Friday night, open lines. We'll be right back. I just had to listen to Blood, Sweat, and Tears there for a minute. Now, Dan and I, okay, let's play a little trivia. And let's see who can pop this up first in Twitter, okay? It's very simple. Without saying the name of anything and the singer here, what was the singer's first hit song before Blood, Sweat, and Tears? That's all I'm saying. Let's see who busts this first in Twitter. Now, and don't Google it. I just want something honest. Now, and speaking about going back in time, do you remember back in 1986, HBO got interrupted? They got interrupted by Captain Midnight. Do you remember that? Tommy, do you remember that? And so this sign flashed up on HBO, and it said, "Good evening, HBO, from Captain Midnight. $12.95 a month? No way." Right? It said, like, Showtime and Movie Channel, beware. You know, some kind of... And so they had this thing that went down about trying to overpower each other's signals here. And it lasted, you know, for minutes. It was a really big deal in 1986. Well, Captain Midnight is back. He just did an interview, and he talks about this whole story. And you can check it out over at coasttocoastam.com. It's incredible. I remember that like it was yesterday, 32 years ago. Incredible. All right. This is Coast to Coast AM, standing in for George Norrie. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. It's Open Lines Friday night. More of your phone calls are next. Stay with us. Welcome back, Coast to Coast AM. My favorite night of the week, Friday night, hanging out with all of you. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, standing in for George Norrie. You can follow me on Twitter. And who, let's see, did we get a winner here? Let's see. Nope. You're wrong. Nope. 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 Really? Okay. Vehicle by the Ides of March, singer David Clayton Thomas. All right, enough of the musical trivia tonight. It's Open Lines, my favorite night of the week. So let's go to first-time caller line, Patrick in Washington State. Patrick, you're up next on Coast. Welcome.
Hey, Jimmy, thanks for taking my call. Going back about 8 years, James was practically my neighbor. I lived in Trout Lake. I lived there for a year. And I can't say that anything paranormal or extraterrestrial happened to me, but I wasn't really looking for those experiences. It was during that year that I learned to fly just south in Hood River, and that's when something happened. It took about a year to get my pilot license, and once I had completed that training, I would fly around a lot. I'd fly over Trout Lake. I'd fly over, you know, the Hood River Valley, the peak. So we talk about Mount Adams. Going to the south about 50 miles is Mount Hood, and then between the two peaks is the Columbia River. And I spent most of my time flying over the Hood River Valley, which is just to the south of the Columbia River. And it was there that a very uneventful flight. I was coming in for a landing 3,000 feet above, I think it was Odell. I was just to the east of Middle Mountain, and there was something in my way. Some kind of, as I was approaching it, it was like a spherical object. Didn't know exactly what it was. I thought it might be a helicopter, possibly something else, an airplane. It was too far out. I didn't hear any radio calls, so I wasn't exactly sure. I approached a little bit more. It's coming into view, and it appears to be football-shaped and metallic. There was light glinting off of it. It was in my way. I was 3,000 feet MSL, descending into 4S2, which is the Hood River Airport, and I actually had to roll to the left to get out of this thing's way.
How big was it?
You know, that's a good question. So you can't really tell just looking directly at it, but I was able to fly just to the left of it. And I think it was about the same size as my airplane. I was flying a Cessna 172, which isn't exactly a big aircraft.
No.
Probably about that size or smaller.
Right. That's incredible. Okay, I've got a couple of questions. Was it moving?
I don't know. Because keep in mind, it's really difficult to tell relative motion. I'm traveling about 100 miles per hour, about 100 knots or so.
Right.
And I'm descending. I believe it was definitely in front of me. It might have been moving toward me. When I rolled to the left and I looked at it to try to get an idea of what it was, the sun, which was setting, it was sort of, I guess it was about 6 p.m. Again, this is going back 8 years. But the sun hit it, and it glinted off of it. It blinded me at that point. I couldn't see what it was. But before I got to it, I couldn't see any rotors. I couldn't see any wings. It certainly didn't look like any kind of a weather balloon, or it wasn't. I don't think it was a drone. I'm not sure what it was. And it's been 8 years. I have no idea what I saw.
Now, a Cessna 172, were you alone in the plane?
I was alone, yeah.
Okay,
I was
alone. So that
I was making radio calls.
Well, so the wings are up high.
Correct.
Right, in a 172. But if you're right. If you're flying by yourself, you were in the left seat, right?
Yep.
And so that means, and if you passed it on its to the left, so it passed you on the right side, starboard, right?
So it passed me on the right, and my right wing would have been, you know, up as I rolled to the left.
Right.
But it was right as I passed it that the setting sun glinted off of it, and it was just a reflection of the sun. I couldn't see it.
Well, I want the audience to understand, because now you've passed it and it's on the right side of the plane, you're sitting on the left, you have no way to see it from behind you now, plus you're landing and you're flying the aircraft, so you didn't
exactly
really get a chance to see it after it was in front of you.
Right. It was a moment in time, and it passed very quickly. I did have to roll to miss it, or I think I would have hit it.
Right.
But I don't know what it was.
Now, what about the tower?
So for us, to the Hood River Airport is an untowered airport.
Untowered. So there you go.
Yeah, it's not controlled airspace.
Right. So no radar, no communication. You weren't able to do any of that.
No, and usually with an untowered airport, it's incumbent upon the pilots visiting that airport to make radio contact, essentially to announce their intentions to let other aircraft know what they're doing, where they're going. And
that's
there
right.
were no radio broadcasts when I encountered this thing.
Incredible. Now, who did you share it with?
It's funny. I landed at the airport right next to the airport. One of my coworkers actually had a house there. I got out of my plane. They all saw me land. They all knew I was there. It was basically an after-work party. And so I walked up, and I grabbed a beer, and I just started telling a few people. I told a few people what I saw, and they started making fun of me. You know, and it's like, how many beers have you had tonight? So, yeah, I haven't told that many people because I honestly don't know what it was. I don't necessarily believe it was extraterrestrial. Could it have been? Possibly. I have no idea. But what I do know is that I don't think it was a balloon. I don't think it was an aircraft. It certainly wasn't a manned aircraft of any type. And I can't explain it.
Now, what are the, you said you lived up at Trout Lake. So you were
right.
one of 20 people that lived in that town. And
yeah, a little more than that.
Okay, 22. But, and it's a beautiful, beautiful little town. You got the little general store. You got a little restaurant right there. You got the Trout Lake Inn. You know, you got the school right there at the intersection. You know, it's so, how do I want to say, it's so America. It is, it's just perfect, right? Okay, but now from downtown Trout Lake. That's kind of funny. From the fork in the road next to East SETI, and you know the fork that I'm talking about. From right there, you can see East SETI Ranch. It's, you know, it's a quarter mile, half mile up the road. It's right there.
Mm-hmm.
But at night, when you've got 100 or 200 people over at East SETI doing the night watch with lasers and the yelling and screaming, what does Trout Lake think about East SETI Ranch?
You know, I never made the attempt to visit James. I was there for a while. I think there's different opinions. I think most people that live there may or may not know him or communicate with him. But I think there's a healthy dose of skepticism in the Trout Lake community that I encountered. But then again, I'm not going to shut the door on it. I think that, you know, could those things be happening? Sure. I lived there for a year. I didn't encounter anything in Trout Lake. But with that said, I wasn't looking for it. I wasn't out at night. I wasn't a part of that crew. So I don't know what I might have missed.
I had the same experience up there that you're talking about in Trout Lake. And we were, my wife and I, right across from the ranch is this beautiful covered bridge, right? So we pull in there. You know the bridge I'm talking about. And we're taking pictures and we're having fun. And this car pulls across the bridge and pulls up to us. Hey, what are you guys doing? I said, hey, you know, we're tourists, you know, taking pictures. Oh, really? Do you want any information about the bridge? I know everything. And I said, actually, yeah, we're here. I'm speaking across the street at East SETI Ranch. He goes, excuse me? And I go, yeah, I'm speaking across. And he drove away. He left me standing there. A second before that, he was ready to give me all the information on the covered bridge and take some pictures and hang out with us. And it was really funny how he just drove away. I went right over to the ranch and told James about it, and he just laughed. So I've often been curious about that. Patrick, thank you for the sighting, and thank you for the phone call.
No problem. Thank you.
Have a great night. And, wow, that's – you don't hear pilots admit too often about things that they have seen out there. Let's go to out west, Spaceman in Port Orchard, Washington. Anybody called Spaceman goes to the front of the line.
Are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, you're doing a great job on that show. Job on that show, by the way, Jimmy.
Oh, thank you, Spaceman.
No problem.
What's on your mind?
I just wanted to call in about. I was kind of wondering what to do about this. For lack of better terms, I'd call it an implant that I had come out of my body the other day, and because of the situation, I've had it twice. It happened once in '97, and once I think in the end of 2000. And I gave the last one to MUFON, and because of the results of the tests and everything, which were really bizarre. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm not really in contact with anybody anymore other than, well, pretty much not in contact with anybody as far as the UFO field goes or what have you. So I was wondering what to do with it. Cause,
what's it look like?
It's like a little tiny, almost like computer-looking chip thing. It's like silver, but it's got some kind of, I was looking at it under a microscope, it's got some kind of writing on it. Like
really?
Symbols and stuff, yeah, and it's beyond magnetic. It does some crazy stuff, so.
Wait a minute, you're saying that you have removed a chip from your body that you've looked at under a microscope, and it's silver, and it has writing on it.
Yeah, like hieroglyphics, pretty much. Like some type of writing. I'm not sure what it says, but it's got a bunch of different little component like areas to it, and it's made of different. I'm pretty sure different.
If you're up in Washington, I would definitely get a hold of MUFON. And the Washington State Director and get something going. That's what I would do.
That's a good idea. I was in contact with John Schuessler even after he wasn't really. He's kind of retired now down in Denver.
Yeah.
I just moved up here from Manitou Springs, Colorado, and they had actually MUFON had done been doing a lifelong case study on me. And I was in contact with them for a while, but then I hadn't talked to anybody up in Washington so far yet, but.
Okay, well, that's what I would do, and you have it. When you said this came out of you a couple of days ago?
Yeah, I actually coughed it out, and I'm feeling a lot better now. It was, I could barely breathe, and I kept coughing, and I coughed it right into my hand when I was leaning over the sink.
Wow. So, yeah, bag it, tag it, and call MUFON.
That'll work. I guess I'll do that then.
Thank you so much, Spaceman, and be safe up there. You know, that's... they may be, you never know. You never know what that thing is. So, yeah, be safe. Let's go to, you know what? I got to go L.A., Los Angeles. Albert, you're up next on Coast.
Hey, good evening, Mr. Church. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Albert.
Hey, so I wanted to talk to you and the audience a little bit. I'm an actor, and I did a movie a few months ago last summer.
Albert, let me jump in. You got to roll up the window or do something and speak into the phone.
Okay, hang on one second.
Okay, quickly.
Okay, can you hear me better now?
Not really, but let's give it another shot.
Okay, so how about, that should be better, right?
Okay, Albert, we're at the top of the hour here. Tell me what happened.
All right, so I was an actor in a film called Apparition. It was with... Kevin Pollak, and we're shooting, my scenes were with him, and we're shooting up in Ione at this place called the Preston Castle.
Yes.
Which was a home for wayward boys.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very famous for having Waylon Jennings over there.
Yep.
And so my scene that night got delayed because of weather. And so I was up in the castle getting a tour behind the scenes. It's a really creepy place. So I was there with one of the other actors in my scene, Jake. And we're just going around, and we're getting, like, a private tour of this, of the basement of this area. So the basic premise of the story was that this caretaker of the facility, her name was Anna, and she got killed. Now, Jake and I, we didn't know this, but it really happened. So as we're getting a tour on the site, we go in the basement, and we go into this little storage area, and I'm filming this whole thing with my phone, and as we get into this little room behind this, it was like a pool where the kids had to wade through to get rid of all the lice. I noticed these flowers, and the caretaker of the place says, well, tonight's the anniversary of her murder when she was actually killed there. And as soon as he said it, I heard these whispers. It was like, hey, hi, hi, just like that.
Right.
Hairs on the back of my neck stood up, and I thought Jake was messing with me, whatever. We leave the room, and we go back to the common area, and I was like, hey, were you guys messing with me? And they said, absolutely not. I played back the video, and you could hear it clear as day right in there. So we freak out. The caretaker, he then shows us some of the other things that he'd seen, some of the shadows, Jake and I were like, you know, we're totally tickled to death. You know, my background, I'm former Navy. I was a nuclear reactor operator. Like, you know, this is out of my wheelhouse. This isn't something I necessarily embraced was this side of the veil, to say the least. I have this on video. Jake and I, we decide to keep pressing our luck. We go upstairs, and there's this, it's one of the creepiest places I've ever been. There was this giant open room where I guess all the kids stayed, and the story goes that the doctor who was in charge of the place, the warden, would do some pretty horrific things for the kids up there. And Jake suddenly thought I was messing with him because his glasses kind of flew up. He had them tucked in on his T-shirt, you know, and they flew, and he thought I flicked them. I didn't. I told Jake we got the heck out of there. So it was one of the craziest experiences, and I the fact that I got it on video was even cooler, and the fact that I was doing a horror film and that happened on set, that was even cooler.
Do you have clearance with this video?
Oh yeah, it's my personal video. I took it. It wasn't during the filming. This was my own, you know, when I was walking the set.
Well, why don't you send it to me?
Really?
Yeah, I want to hear a good EVP.
Yeah, there was a girl there who was she got very jealous. I guess she was a ghost hunter. And what I found out was that the Preston Castle is one of the more haunted places in the United States. And so the fact that I got it on, you know, I played it for her, and she got so jealous. She's like, I've been coming here for years and years and years, and I've never heard this, and you got this on your first take.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, well, it freaked me out. Better you than me, but it happened to me. So, yeah, I'd love to send it to you.
Just hit me up. Just go to my website and just click on my name over at Coast to Coast AM. It'll take you right over there, and you can find my EP and my producer and email and all of that stuff, and you can just do it directly, okay?
Oh, perfect. Hey, have a wonderful evening. Thank you for such an amazing show.
Yeah, thank you, Albert. All the best. That's a great phone call. See, the magical EVP moment. I was looking at some videos over the weekend of, you know, the first ghost caught on tape and some of these things that happened over the weekend. I think one of them was on Coast to Coast, right? Am I right about this, Dan? Okay. It pretty incredible stuff, but that's one side of it. The other side that I really appreciate is when somebody films something on their cell phone themselves and sends it to me. I want to check it out. This is Coast to Coast AM, standing in for George Norrie. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Friday night, open lines. This is Coast to Coast AM.